for a while. And one of the things that you discover when you start studying first principles, that the first principles don't just apply to people that are new Christians. They certainly do apply to people that are new Christians. You have to learn some of these things to know how to live as a Christian. But you also start to realize as you study through these things that it's things that we have to remember, that we need to remember. As you go on in life, as you grow as a Christian, as you learn more about deeper things, then sometimes it's easy to forget about the small things. And, you know, the little things are not really the little things in life oftentimes. Lack of first principles or falling away from the first principles or not keeping the first principles in line will often hurt you as a Christian or help you or not help you to be able to go further with the deeper things. So as we look back at all this, it's not just for the folks that are new Christians. It's for the folks that are thinking about becoming Christians, and it's for folks that have been Christians for many years, the things that we need to learn and keep in mind. So whenever we were studying, last week we were in Colossians chapter 3, and we started in verse 1 last week. And of course, the idea here is, in Colossians, the reason we're looking at these verses is we started talking about in our study about how that we as Christians should begin to, whenever we become a Christian, we should begin to take our focus more and more off of the world and more on things that are above. And, you know, Colossians chapter 3 really hits that like nail on the head. It's right where we want to be if we want to learn about those things. And he starts out, we're going to look back with just a slight amount of review, not spend a long time on it. Beginning in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1, he says, "If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above." Make sure that slide's working here. Turn it on, right? Okay. All right. Here's where we were, Colossians chapter 3, or chapter 3, verses 1. If you were raised with Christ, which means if you were buried with Him in baptism and then raised again with Him, if you were raised with Christ, you're to seek those things which are above. And that's the focus. That was the focus on our ending topic last week, and that'll be our focus that we're going to start with this week. It says, "Where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God, set your minds on things above and not on things of the earth." And then he goes on and he says, "For you died, for you put these things away, you put these things out of your life." And it gives you a list of things, and we talked about those in detail, of the things that we're supposed to put out of our life. He says, therefore, in verse 5, he said, "Therefore put to death your members." And we said that that was your hearing, your smell, your all of your senses and your mind. The things that direct you or give you direction in your life, the things that you think. So you're supposed to put all those things out of your life and bring them into subjection in a new way. As a Christian, it gets us down to, I guess, verse 7. Let's see, verse 6. Verse 6, because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. And we talked about, that's a terminology or a phrase, the sons of disobedience. It's just talking about people that aren't believers, people that aren't Christians, people that aren't following the faith. And he says, "In which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them." And I think we could all say that at some point in our lives we became Christians and we left the old life. We buried the old man in the waters of baptism. We were raised to walk in newness of life with Christ. And that's what he's saying here. When you reach that point, you're supposed to bring yourself under subjection and you're supposed to do away with all these things. So he's continuing that thought in verse 8. Verse 8 is where we'll pick up here this morning. Let me scroll down in my notes to get to that. Okay. So in verse 8, he says, "But now you yourselves are to put off these." And he gives a list. And he says, and I'll read through the list and then we'll go back and look at them. He said, "Put these off: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you've put off the old man with his deeds, and to put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of Him who created him, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian or Cisterian, slave nor free, but Christ is all in all." So looking at this list that He gave us, the first one He starts with is anger. You're to put these things off, and then He follows it right up with wrath. Anger, you're supposed to put off anger. How would you define anger? What would you describe anger as yourself? Seems like a simple definition, but again, like I usually say, if you look at the Greek word in the context of what he's saying here, It's a little different. And the reason I ask that question, is it a sin to be angry?
No.
It's not. And we're going to talk about that a little later. So that's the reason I'm asking the question, what is anger? What does anger mean to you? Yeah, so that's exactly it. It's a relatively strong displeasure. So, is that an emotion that God gave us?
Yes.
It is, isn't it? So if we would say that anger is wrong, then we would point a finger at God and say, well, you know, He gave us this emotion, but it's wrong to have it. But He gave it to us, right? So we've said that it's not a sin to be angry. We understand that. Is there a place that it talks about what you're supposed to do when you're angry? Let's look at Ephesians 4:26 before I jump down to that part. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26. We'll do 26 and 27. Ephesians chapter 4 verses 26 and 27 says, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil." So I think here's the key to it. You know, we understand that anger is an emotion that God has given us. We have the ability to be angry. It's okay to be angry. There was one time that's a very famous time that Jesus was angry. When was that?
In the temple. In the temple.
Yeah. He flipped the tables for the money changers. So we see that He was angry. He acted on that anger. And He flipped the tables over. And we understand that Christ lived this whole life without sin. So that wasn't a sinful thing to do. He took action and He flipped the tables over, and the money changers were doing things that were illegal. They were taking advantage of people, and He acted on it and put a stop to it. So that was going to be one of my next questions that we're going to talk about is, if being angry was wrong, we'd have to say that God giving us this emotion had given us an emotion that we shouldn't have. If being angry was wrong, then we'd have to say that Christ was wrong in flipping the money changer tables, but we know that's not the case. So it gives us a good indication that we can be angry, but what are we supposed to do here according to Ephesians chapter 4? It says, be angry and what?
Sin
not. So now we're getting down to the root of it. Be angry and sin not. So where does the sin come in when we're angry? It's the actions that you decide upon, isn't it? Yeah, you're exactly right. You can follow through with your anger, but if you follow through with it in a bad way, in a sinful way, if you don't control your anger and then it becomes a sin to you, that's where you get in trouble. Is God ever angry? Psalm chapter 7, verse 11. Psalm chapter 7, verse 11 says, God is a just God, or God is a just judge, and God is angry with the wicked every day. So let me read that again. God is a just judge, and God is angry with the wicked every day. I thought about what that means. Read a little bit in a commentary, but I think really what that's trying to say is God is angry. He's unhappy all the time with the wicked. I don't think it means that He gets up and He thinks about it, because God's a spirit. He doesn't live in a physical world like us. I don't think that He gets mad at some point every day because of the wicked. I think God is upset. God is angry. God has this feeling of anger every day because of the wicked. I think it's something that He experiences. But we know that God doesn't sin. It comes down to the decisions that we make and how we follow through. Back to Christ flipping the money changer tables. That wasn't a sinful thing that Christ done. Brings me to my next question about anger, I guess. Is there a time whenever anger can be a positive thing?
Well, if you're correcting truth, I mean correcting error.
Yeah.
As Jesus was in with the many changes.
So sometimes anger is a good thing if you channel it properly, if you don't make poor decisions with it. Anger can provoke you to overcome fear. Anger can give you the courage to do something that maybe you wouldn't normally do. If something you see that's happening that's an injustice, It can cause you to stand up for right. It can cause you to stand up for the truth. It can cause you to teach those around you that you might normally be uncomfortable with. So anger is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think a lot of that is why God gave us that emotion to settle in on us, that we can learn as a Christian to use it in a positive way.
And even in the correction of foul speech, people cursing, or things of that nature, use gracious talk instead of that.
Yeah, anger can provoke you, and you have to go about it in a kind way, but it can help you to be stern when you need to be. Jonathan? Yeah.
And when you allow anger to, if you start reacting off of your anger in a negative way, in a sinful way, basically what you've done is you've now said, okay, I'm back to my desire for violence. And any emotion can trigger that. It's not just anger. I mean, there's happiness can do that. Lust can do that. There's all kinds of stuff that can do that. But anger seems to be the one that we focus on because that seems to be our most negative reaction when we have an angry emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah,
anger usually shows up pretty quick, and it's usually visible. You know, somebody's demeanor, look on their face, you can see it a lot more than you can other emotions. And what we have to remember as we study through this, as we study through this list of what he's given us, you know, he's talking to some fairly new Christians here in Colossae, and he's telling them, you've got to put these things off, you've got to change these things. So they've had all these emotions all along, but now they're trying to learn to channel them as a Christian. So it's very, very relative to what we're studying as far as first principles. Not only are we trying to learn that for people that are already Christians, that are new Christians, but for people that might be contemplating becoming a Christian. And it's really good for us that have been Christians for a while not to let these things get away from us, that we can revert back into not considering the things to be frustrated or angry about. You know, there's lots of things around us in our daily life that can cause us to be angry. When I was younger, I had a pretty quick temper. So when I became a Christian, I had to learn how to channel that. And I went almost too far the other way for a while. Like, I was dead set on not letting anybody provoke me at all. So I had to learn a balance. It's like most things in life, it's a balance. Everything we do as a Christian is a balance. Too much one way or too much the other way, the balance in the middle is where you need to be. There's so many things around us today that we can feel frustrated about or be angry about. When you go somewhere and you get service from somebody about anything, whether it's the food industry or just trying to buy something, nowadays if somebody gives you very normal, what used to be very normal service, they can seem exemplary. You think, man, they're really waiting on me well, or they're doing a good job. Service industry is different than it used to be. You look at the world around us and the things that's expected of us that didn't used to be expected of us can anger us oftentimes. We live in a great country, but it's not the same country it used to be. The things that are talked about or put on us can cause stress and frustration, and it can cause you to bear that burden, unnecessarily sometimes. It's hard to ignore. It's on social media. It's in conversations around all the time. While it's good to be aware, it's easy to get really frustrated with it. So much corruption and difficulty around us, and it's something that we have to deal with where we live here nowadays. So whenever he's talking about anger and not sinning, he's across the board with this emotion, how you're not supposed to do this. But what if we get angry with a brother or sister? Is that going to happen?
Never.
Chris said never. That was quick. So there's no possibility that I'm going to make y'all mad or you're going to make me mad. That's not going to happen. So it's kind of funny the other day when I made the announcement that Cleet had made, and I poked fun at him for saying 55 and older was, could come to this dinner. And I made a little fun from the pulpit when I made the announcement. There was a couple of people thought that I was really kind of not happy with Cleet, but that wasn't the case at all. I think it's really good for you guys to see an elder be able to have a sense of humor. And I've got one. I just keep it tucked away most of the time because it would confuse you if I let it out a lot, and a little bit of that happened that day, but I thought it was funny, so it was a poke at a little humor there. But there are times when things don't go well between us, And we can get angry at each other. Brothers can do things that upset you. They can say things that hit different than they mean it to be. So where's our guideline for that? Matthew chapter 5. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 5. We're going to start about verse 21. And this is Jesus talking here too. And if you've got a heading in your Bible, it probably says murder there, beginning at 21. So you think we're going to go talk about murder when we're talking about us being unhappy with each other? That's not it. There's some good principles here. We're going to look at those. So starting in verse 21, and we're going to go down through about 24, right in there. Verse 21 of Matthew chapter 5, it says, "You've heard it said of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be in danger of judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of judgment." I'm going to read through this and we'll go back and look at it a little bit. So if you're angry with your brother without cause, you'll be in danger of judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raka, or Raka, if you look it up, it's Raka is how they say it. It's got a little English on it, so to speak. But whoever says Raka shall be in danger of counsel. But whoever says you fool should be in danger of hellfire. And therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there, remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there before the altar. Go on your way. First reconcile to your brother and then come and offer your gift. So then it goes on to talk about, you know, reconciling with an adversary. And that's not really what we're thinking about here. So let's look back at this. And this was confusing to me for a lot of years. I would read this and I thought, man, that's a lot of old talk. Like, I don't understand that. It's got something to do with Jewish culture. But what I always got out of it is that you're supposed to make things right with your brother as you can. And you know, there's also a verse that says, "Live peaceably with all men, so as so much is within you." I don't have that written down. It's just from memory. So I don't know the verse off the top of my head. But you know, there's a balance here again. You've got to try to make things right with your brother. But if he ain't having it, then it won't happen. It can't happen. So there has to be forgiveness from you if he don't know you need it or that he needs it. But looking back at the verses here, whenever he says, he starts out comparing this to murder and he says, "If you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment." That's a reference back to the old law that they were still living under at the time when Christ was talking to them. That's a reference back to the Ten Commandments, "You shall not murder." And he says here, he said, "But I say to you," this is Christ talking, he said, "But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Whoever says to his brother, Raka, shall be in danger of the council." So it elevates, you see, as it goes. "And whoever says you fool should be in danger of hellfire." So I've done quite a bit of studying on this, and I've got better resources than I used to have whenever I tried to study this out to get an understanding of what this means. And you see that it escalates as it goes. And if you're angry with your brother for no reason, that might just mean, like, I don't really like Chris. I don't like the look on his face. He bothers me. I don't like being around Chris. I don't like his mannerisms. I'm just picking on Chris. He's sitting there grinning, so I knew he could take it. So it could be something like that. Now, it don't all mesh up. We saw that with Paul and Barnabas, and that didn't work out with them. And they still went on and did the Lord's work. That's a good example of that. But he's saying, if you're angry with your brother without cause, find commonality. Be kind to each other and find commonality there. And don't be angry with him without cause. And I got to research in this, and when it talks about you could be in danger of judgment, whenever you've done something that was in danger of judgment in the Jewish culture, he was talking about going before the local tribunal, referring to the Jewish laws. That's the first step, going to the tribunal. So if you were angry without your brother, you were causing problems within the Jewish culture, causing problems within worship in the Jewish culture, they'd have you go talk to the tribunal. That's the first step. And that would have been the lowest group of law that you would be put in front of as a Jew. But then it escalates, and it says if you say Raka, then you'd have to go see the council. What does that mean? I always called it Reka. I didn't know how to pronounce it. And this guy that I was listening to, he might not know either, but he seemed like he knew more than I did, so it's Raka. Empty head, that's what it says. So I said, that cleat's got an empty head. He's got an empty head. Well, we'd laugh about it now because that's kind of funny. That's not that much of an insult, but again, Jesus is talking to the Jews, and they look at things a lot different. So if you said Raka and you said that that's an empty head, the meaning comes from Aramaic word. It's a mildly insulting word to use to tease, but it can mean empty, used to express a very low opinion of someone's intelligence. You know, nowadays, You know, I wouldn't say it as randomly as I used to, but I used to say that guy's dumb as a rock. You know, that's slow intelligence. Well, you're not really supposed to say that about people. And whenever you would be in a situation where you were being combative with somebody or saying something so negative or so low or they're so dense, however you want to say it, then you could be in danger of having to go before the council. Next step. If you're doing that, because you're causing problems with your brothers. It's your brothers and sisters is what it amounts to. He's saying, y'all are grinning. It's kind of funny, isn't it? How people would do. But this is, you know, it's a funny example, but it's realistic. I think we look at things a little different. There's insults that we could say to each other today that would hit like that, like it would in the Jewish culture. But you'd have to go see the council if you did that. And that would be the Sanhedrin. So if I say Sanhedrin, that sounds different than the council, right? That was a little more dreaded thing to have to go to, because Sanhedrin, they didn't really mess around. They come in with the robes and they sit down and they wanted to hear the business, and then they make a judgment. And they made a judgment, and then you had to do what they come up with. So that would be like the second level if you said Rakah. It'd be a difficult thing. And then the last one was fool. You know, and I've always heard, even as a kid, my granny said, don't you call nobody a fool. I mean, that was whooping territory. If I call somebody a fool, switch. You know, get your own kind of thing. You didn't want to do that. My granny was, she was, and I think that's probably from this verse, but I wonder if, I mean, she didn't have the resources that we do now to study this and look at it, but I wonder what she really thought that meant, because it was switch territory if you said that. Well, if you called somebody a fool in the Jewish culture, to call somebody a fool, it was often reserved, a fool was often reserved for the most guilt-ridden, like idolaters, somebody that would have been an idolater in the Jewish culture, really looked down on. I guess unless they were all doing it, because you know they all did it at times. But if you were an idolater and you were out of step with the rest of them, that would be what you would be. Those who have extreme vulgarity or a very immoral approach, someone that's way off the course, they would essentially be saying to send someone to Guyana if they were talking about this. They were saying that if you were a fool, that you were worthy of Guyana. Does anybody remember what Guyana is, the place outside the city there in Jerusalem? It's where they burned garbage. There was a fire all the time. Dogs hung around there and tried to eat scraps and different things. It was the most horrible place that the Jewish culture knew. So if you said fool to somebody, then you were essentially saying they deserved to be thrown out there. That's a pretty bad insult if you look at it from that perspective. So the biggest problem with that is you're pronouncing a judgment on someone that you don't really have the pay scale to do that. That's God's territory. Now, that doesn't mean that, like today, everybody says, oh, you can't judge me. I can do whatever I want to do. That's not what that means. We understand as Christians, new Christians, old Christians, we understand as Christians that we can look at somebody's life, and if it's not matching up with the Scriptures, then the Scriptures judge them. Because we understand that doesn't mean that we're judging them in an unfavorable way. We have the right to understand what the Scriptures say. And if their life beside the Scriptures, doesn't match, then we're not unnecessarily judging them. What this is saying is that you're kind of passing judgment on this person, that they're a fool and that they deserve to be thrown in this Guyana, the place where they burn trash. So when you start to understand the definitions of these words, you start to back up and look at that and think, well, there's more to it than this. And it makes sense. And Jesus was explaining it to them in such a way that they could understand it. And he says, therefore, because of this, if you're in this kind of situation with your brother or sister, you know, leave your gift at the altar, go get it fixed and make it be right. So when we use those verses nowadays, we use them quite a bit whenever we talk about getting things straightened out with our brother and sister. But this was serious business when he was talking about it. Thoughts or comments about that?
Well, it's a malicious statement.
Kind of the bottom a little bit, isn't it? Like you're saying to someone, you're not useful to me in any way. There's nothing that you know or nothing that you think or nothing that you can tell me that's useful to me. That's kind of the bottom of where it's at. It's not the joking around that we often do. You know, I've said the dumb as a rock thing a lot when I was younger. I think about it a little more before I say that now. Yeah.
Is that's always been special to me.
Yeah.
If there's no God, if you say there is no God,
so that's a very good example of how the word fool would be used. If the person is a fool that says there is no God, then what's going to happen with that person?
It's almost like saying they're not worth anything.
Yeah, so that's God's words that says the fool in his heart says there is no God. God has the right to say that. Yeah, where we wouldn't. So I thought that was interesting when I studied that out. Any other thoughts or comments before we move along? This is a verse that we use a whole lot when we're talking about our brothers and sisters and making things right. And sometimes they're used out of context, sometimes properly, but like anything. Okay, moving on to the next word, wrath. He follows up the word anger. This is back over in Colossians chapter 3, Colossians chapter 3, verse 8. He follows up wrath right after anger. Well, I kind of always thought wrath was the same thing. What's the definition of wrath? If anger is anger is a strong feeling of displeasure, what is wrath?
I think the wrath really follows through with the anger you have, inflicting damage.
Yeah. Wrath can definitely provoke that. The definition of wrath, of the Greek word that our word wrath comes from, the English word, it's a feeling of intense anger that does not subside often on an epic scale. Quite a bit different than just anger. Anger, you get mad, but you can get over it. You heard somebody say, well, he's mad, but you get over it. If you've got wrath, you don't get over it so easy. And if you look, I think it's Ephesians 4, 26 and 27 again, if you understand what that definition is of wrath, the feeling of intense anger that does not subside often on epic scale, if you look at God's words here in Ephesians 4 and 26, 27, he's trying to help us with what he's telling us. He says, 26 in Ephesians 4 and 26, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. He's saying, don't chew on this thing longer than sunset. He gives you a timeline. If something ever makes you so angry that you feel like you're at the wrath stage, have you ever been mad enough you stayed mad for a week to 3 days? When I was younger, I'd get mad. It'd take me a while. But what God's saying is here, he's saying, follow what I'm telling you. I'll give you the sundown, but get over it by then. Find a way to put it aside. Let it subside. Don't hang on to it. He's saying that wrath, anger turns to wrath, but wrath shouldn't turn to something else. Wrath will take you places you really don't want to go. Now, here's another thing. You know, God has wrath. Again, it's an emotion that He gave us. We wouldn't be able to have wrath if it wasn't something possible that God would have within us, but it's an emotion that God and our Lord have and are capable of. So the emotion's not the bad thing. Again, it's how we act on it or what we do with it. Because God has wrath. He takes wrath on those that don't follow Him, takes vengeance on them. So we know that God is able to have wrath, so we should be able to have wrath without sin. We should be able to do that. Two totally different things, anger and wrath. Malice is the next one that he comes up with. What is malice? Malice is the word malice, it's a noun. It's a bit of a character trait.
I thought it was wanting ill towards someone.
That's what it is. So malice is a character trait that feels a need to see others suffer. So malice is a character trait where you would like to really see others suffer and struggle. So he's telling you, Put malice out of your heart. Put it away from you, because if you're the type of person that enjoys seeing others suffer, then that's not a character trait that a Christian should have. Have you ever had somebody that was like a thorn in your side, somebody in your life that was just so difficult, whether it's work or family or just so difficult? We've all had them. Don't say their name. We've all had them. But have you seen something bad happen to that person? What was your reaction inside? Did you still feel bad for them like you should? Or did you say, yeah, he got his, you know, kind of thing. So we're human and we can have that moment where we think, well, that happened. But then you've got to not enjoy that. You can't revel in that. You can't create situations to where bad happens. You can see where this could carry you. If you're the type of person that enjoys someone else's difficulty and struggle, then you might be the type of person that would want to, I guess, facilitate that happening. So you can see how that could carry us to a different place than we want to go. So that's why he lists malice. I thought it was such an odd word. Blasphemy. What is blasphemy? We always usually think of blasphemy of the Holy Spirit when we think of that. Blasphemy.
Speaking evil
of others. It's basically slander. Slander would be our word that we would use if you're slandering somebody. You're speaking evil of others, like making a false statement to damage someone's reputation. That would be what blasphemy would be. We'll keep going a little bit further. We've got a couple more minutes. So any thoughts or comments there on that section? I want to stop and give you time to comment or share your thoughts, not just keep going. Yeah, it can. Like Casey's saying, if you hold on to wrath and it can definitely stew on you, you can keep pulling on that and it can start to take over parts of your life it doesn't deserve. It can definitely cause you to step to different levels. Probably going on through the rest of this, instead of going on and doing some of the definitions, I'm going to read it for you and then ask you to study on it this coming week. And let's see, about verse 10. Let's see, verse 9. So, verse 8 there, he goes on, he says, blasphemy. We know what filthy language, putting filthy language out of your mouth is. And then he goes on to say in verse 9, do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man with his renewed, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him, where there is neither Greek nor Jew nor circumcised or uncircumcised or barbarian or Cicerone or slave nor free, but Christ is all in all. And a couple of odd words there, barbarian and Cicerone. And be something to ponder on and study on a little bit before next week. So I'll stop there. It's showing 11 o'clock. We'll have our next bell here in just a second. We'll get into our definitions and talk about that a little bit next week. Thank you for your participation and see you guys next week.